SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
A new SBS music station is here.
SBS Pop Euro.
Filled with Eurovision hits non-stop.
You want more?
The hits you know and the hits you'll want to know.
On DAB Radio, online,
the SBS Audio app
and SBS On Demand.
You're listening to SBS News.
The CLP came to power promising to overhaul the justice system in the NT, and Corrections Minister Jared Maley has said the government stopped holding people in watchhouses for long periods of time. What are Naja's clients telling you?
Yeah, well, our clients are telling us, and our lawyers are seeing it themselves now that we've worked out what's happening, that people are in fact still being held in watchhouses for extended periods of time. And what's basically happened is the government has changed a name, and they're saying that it's not happening anymore because they've changed a name and a classification of the facility. But in reality, it's the same cells, it's the same conditions, and it's really quite troubling what our clients are experiencing.
So these issues were raised last year in an NT ombudsman report that called the conditions unacceptably poor, inhumane, and recommended all prisoners be removed from watchhouses as a matter of urgency. Can you describe the conditions that report canvassed?
Yeah, that report, and you know, if any listeners have the ability to actually look it up and look at the photos, I'd really encourage you to do so. Like the photos of people being, mattresses, 17 people in a crowded cell. So that report was highlighting the fact that people were going weeks on end without showers, that people were not seeing sunlight for days and days on end. People were in these cells which had fluorescent lights on 24/7. So again, these are all things that would fit the definition of torture under international conventions. So no ability to sleep without these fluorescent lights on. One open toilet in a room with 17 people, so you have to use the toilet in plain view of 17 other people. The only drinking water was a bubbler attached to the top of the toilet, so you're literally drinking out of a tap on the toilet that's being used by 17 people. And the crowding conditions led to all sorts of issues, like one old man who was trying to press his nose up to the door just to get a little bit of fresh air, and a guard opened the door and the door took the end of his finger off because that's how crowded these cells were. So it's horrific reading. It's things that should never have been allowed to occur in Australia in 2025. And I guess what we're seeing now is this lack of transparency, a deliberate attempt to hide the fact that there are still elements of this going on.
The concerns you've raised this week go specifically to the Darwin Transitional Custody Centre, which used to be called the Darwin City Watch House. Can you just describe what changes have been made at that facility and what the government said about those?
So last year, we had huge numbers of people, around 200 people, being held in watch houses for extended periods of time. And just to kind of, briefly try to paint a picture, a watch house is something that's built usually attached to a police station. And they're just, small cells in a police station, sort of like what people might have seen in the movies. And the purpose of a watch house is basically when police arrest somebody, there's a place for them to be put while the police decide either to give them bail or to refuse bail. And generally, people should only be in watch houses for a day, in some cases, 2 to 3 days at most. So they're not prisons. They're not long-term facilities. They don't have, proper meals, exercise area, showers, visiting places, contact with family, all of the things that should be in a prison. So that's what a watch house is. It's built and designed for just, a couple nights at most. So then last year we had 200 people being held for weeks and weeks on end in these watch houses, 17 people per room, literally, no room to stand. People, we had fluorescent lights on 24/7, horrific conditions that the ombudsman detailed in their report, which came out at the end of last year. So then the Northern Territory government said, oh, well, we've stopped the practice, and quite a few times has reiterated, particularly Gerard Maley, Minister for Corrections, said that we're no longer holding people for extended periods in watch houses. And one of the things that NT government committed to was that they would provide regular reports to the ombudsman about anybody who was being held longer term in a watch house facility. So there was an appearance that things had been, in a sense, corrected. It should never have gotten that bad to begin with, but government was saying that they had changed their behaviour and fixed the issue. What we've uncovered in the past few weeks is that actually what government has done is they've taken the Darwin Police Watch House and they've renamed half of it as a corrections facility, the Darwin Transitional Custody Centre, and they've shifted control of it, reclassified it as a corrections asset rather than a police asset. And people are being held there for at least 4 weeks at a time. So basically, whilst they're still saying that, you know, we're not holding people for extended periods in watch houses, so basically they're still doing what they were doing. They've changed the name and then are claiming that they're not doing it.
What does the situation now look like compared to what was detailed in the Ombudsman's report? Is it still that bad, or how have things changed since November last year?
Based on what we've been able to piece together, and again, this is part of the issue with a lack of transparency and a lack of accountability, is we don't know how bad things are. But based on what we've been able to put together, it's probably more like five or six people in a cell. It used to be last year that people were being held long-term at the Palmerston Watch House and also on occasion Catherine and Alice Springs. As far as we know, that's not occurring. It's only the Darwin Watch House, now renamed DTCC. But still similar elements. So some of the things that our clients are telling us, they're in a cell with five or six people, a small cell, for at least 23 hours a day. They often don't see the sun for multiple days on end. We had one client tell us when our lawyer said, how long have you been here? The client said, I don't know. I haven't seen the sun in days. I've got no idea how long I've been here for. similar issues with no proper exercise or outdoor areas. The only outdoor areas that clients have access to are in the underground car park. So again, the Darwin Watch House is literally built into a multi-story mall where there's a Coles facility, and it's in, you know, downtown Darwin. And so once a day, people will be taken out into an underground car park as their outdoor exercise time. The other issue that's really causing a lot of concern for our clients is the fact that none of the usual mechanisms or systems for them to contact family exist at the Darwin Transitional Centre. So prisoners all have family contact numbers so that they can call out to family. Those numbers are not brought across. There are not call out facilities, and family don't know that they've been shifted into this facility. So family are generally not able to find them or book visits. So people are effectively feeling like they're being held in secret in really poor conditions where their mental health is deteriorating because of you know, again, the lack of sunlight, lack of access to air, the crowding. And another really common complaint by the clients that we've spoken with is just how cold it is. So again, a lot, you know, our clients, many of them come from remote communities, not used to cold conditions, and we've got extremely cold temperatures where even our lawyers will say that spending 20 minutes inside is uncomfortable, and we've got clients being held for weeks and weeks on end.
The ABC has also reported an internal memo from a senior NT Health Department official warned in 2024 at the height of these sort of overcrowding issues that there were significant clinical risks associated with the conditions in watch houses. What do things look like in terms of people's access to medical care, healthcare, and that sort of thing at this point in time, as far as you know?
Yeah, it's still a huge concern for us. So as far as we know, and again, this is based on speaking with clients who are being held on the inside, there is no medical practitioner or nurse, so there's no health service at the DTCC. One of the things that's generally expected as a mandatory minimum standard for holding people in detention is that they're given a full medical check within the first day of being held, because people come in with all sorts of pre-existing medical conditions. Often people are on regular medication that they don't have physically with them when they're brought into detention. So as far as we know, there's no nurses, there's no health checks. And again, people are being held for at least up to 4 weeks. That's a serious issue. If somebody needs to be on regular medication or has an underlying medical condition and they're being held in these conditions for 4 weeks, unfortunately, this is what leads to deaths in custody. And there's just no excuse to not provide basic health care and health checks for people who are on long-term detention.
Mm. And in terms of deaths in custody, you're from the Northern Australia Aboriginal Justice Agency. Can you just talk to me a little bit about the overrepresentation of First Nations people in prisons, particularly in the NT, but nationally, obviously, and how that fits into this broader picture of the types of experiences people are having when they come into contact with the justice system?
Yeah, there's a number of things that are all working together effectively to lead to these really problematic outcomes. So in the Northern Territory, generally between 85 to 90% of our people in detention are Aboriginal, and quite, you know, I would say appallingly, the youth numbers, it's often 100% of youth who are detained are Aboriginal. Under this government, we've seen a huge increase in the numbers of people who are detained. So when you look at sort of a graph that shows daily prison numbers, within about 4 to 6 weeks after this government coming into power, there was a noticeable spike. And so, you know, we were generally running around 2,200 people, 2,200 to 2,400 people in prison a day, which is huge given how small our population is. Again, numbers don't tell the real story, but 3% of the Northern Territory Aboriginal population is in prison on any given day. So, you know, 3 out of 100 people are locked up, not just subject to criminal proceedings, but actually locked up in detention. And so this government has pushed the numbers of people in detention from sitting where it had sat, which was around the 2,200 to 2,400, which again was already too high, but they quite quickly pushed it up to about 3,000. And so now we're fluctuating between 2,800 to 3,000 people a day.
Another issue that Naja has been raising concerns about is the use of bail laws. So the CLP came to power and that they've said that they fully expect more people to go to prison. And in a sense, from their perspective, that's the point. One of the things they've changed in a raft of reform to criminal law is bail laws. And Naja's got a high court challenge against that. Can you talk to me a little bit about, I guess, that tough on crime perspective and specifically the bail laws and how they connect with this issue of people being held on remand in watchhouses?
Yeah, it's really important, I think, that we understand the connections between these things. So the reason that people are being held for longer periods of time in watchhouses is because we don't have the physical infrastructure to hold them properly in for-purpose prisons. So, you know, if somebody is going to be held long-term for weeks, months, or years, the minimum we should expect is that they're held under the right types of conditions in a facility that's actually built for it. And so what the NT government did was they came in and for political reasons, they rapidly increased the number of people being held in detention, but they didn't actually stop and make sure that the infrastructure was ready for that. So they wanted the quick win, the quick news story about how many more people were locking up, but did none of the foundational groundwork that would be required to actually do that in a competent and humane way. So when we then look at, so the bail laws were the main mechanism that they used to basically bring in an extra 600 people into prison almost, you know, overnight or within the space of a few months. And the bail laws that were challenging in the High Court, effectively, you know, the two grounds for our challenge are that One, it's actually an impermissible interference with judicial discretion. So the laws basically say there's already a presumption against bail. And then what the NT government did was say, even if a judge is satisfied that bail should be granted, they must not grant bail unless the judge is satisfied that there's no risk to the community. So they're really telling judges you're not allowed to grant bail, and it's very, very hard for any judge to say there's no risk to the community. So they're interfering with the whole reason we have judges, which is to exercise case-by-case nuanced decision-making. And then the second grounds that we're challenging the bail laws on that it effectively constitutes a type of punishment without sentence. So again, under our systems of law that you know have protected us and existed for decades, only a judge has the power to issue a punishment. The executive government cannot go around punishing people just because either they want to get political mileage or they don't like somebody. It's why we have independent judges. And what we're seeing, and this goes back to the whole Watch House issue, is now between 40 to 50% of people in our prisons who are being detained haven't been found guilty of anything. It's quite an extraordinary number, and it's really a sign of a failing criminal justice system. Imagine any other system where up to, you know, half of the people who are coming through that system, you don't actually know whether they should be there or not. So 40 to 50% of people haven't been found guilty, but because of these bail laws, they're spending months and months in prison before they're actually sentenced. And so then what we're seeing is people spending much longer in prison than what their offending objectively warrants. So the government is the one who is punishing people rather than the judge, because by the time the judge can deal with it, somebody has already served their punishment.
And this is an issue that's also attracted some attention from the UN. In December last year, the UN Working Group on Arbitrary Detention came to Australia and visited facilities across different jurisdictions. The NT was alone in denying access to all facilities. WA blocked access to youth facilities, but the NT said no access. And the UN Working Group expressed significant concern about that. I just want to tease out what you were saying about how changing the name and the mix of correctional services happening at what used to be the Darwin City Watch House, how that affects data and the level of transparency and oversight that groups like yours can have in terms of what's going on in the correctional system and watch houses.
Yeah, it has quite a few flow on links. So at a really practical level, it actually just makes it hard for us to see our clients and talk to them because we don't know where they are. So that has a lot of flow on impacts in terms of then cases might have to be adjourned. So it's been pretty common and still happens where a lawyer books an appointment to see their client. The last known, you know, address where their client was being held was one of the prisons here in Darwin. And it, you know, you have to book quite a ways in advance. The lawyer finally gets to that booking with their client, goes out to the prison, and then is told, oh, your client's not here. And in quite a few cases, we've been told we don't actually know where they are, but they're not here. So then the lawyer has to go ringing around, trying to find whatever avenue possible to actually work out where their client is, book another matter, and then go out and speak to their client. And so that will delay court cases by months just by not being able to speak to a client. That's bad for everybody, bad for victims, bad for families, bad for the community.
And what does the reclassification mean in terms of the data going to the ombudsman, who's been critical, you know, of what's happening, what was happening in watch houses? How do these changes at the Darwin Transitional Custody Centre affect what the ombudsman has access to?
Mm. Yeah, it basically lets the NT government avoid accountability and transparency. So in the Ombudsman's report, the Ombudsman recommended that Northern Territory government report to the Ombudsman the numbers of people being held in watch houses and how many days they were being held in watch houses. The government committed to do that and had been reporting, and still, as far as we know, is reporting, but by reclassifying the watch house to a correctional centre, they haven't been reporting on these numbers. So they're basically hiding what they're actually doing in terms of their reports to the Ombudsman, which is the only accountability mechanism we have for this at the moment in the Northern Territory.
Ben, we're out of time. Thanks so much for speaking to Weekend One-on-One.
Starting a new life in Australia isn't easy.
A lot of companies have rejected me.
Sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm gonna quit, I've give up.
Work in Progress is a podcast to help skilled migrants rebuild their careers in a new country. You'll hear inspiring real-life stories, expert advice, and valuable tips to help you find a job and advance your career. Work in Progress. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.